This episode is brought to you by The Manor, a premier addiction treatment facility in the hills of Wisconsin's Kettle Moraine Forest. Their program offers a tailored approach to those struggling with addiction in a secluded setting with no more than 11 men and women. With highly personalized treatment focused on trauma, Dr. Chantel Thomas and her expert team offer an authentic experience, creating the kind of deep emotional change that's crucial for long-term recovery. If you or someone you love are struggling with addiction, call The Manor at 414-930-1930. That's 414-930-1930. You can learn more about The Manor by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting discoverthemanor.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are. Falling squares on TV
screens, still falling in line. I'm Laura Wiseman, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
Your first time here, thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity. So this episode features the author Laura Wiseman, who was here for episode 62, where she talked about her book, her first book, Spiritual Nomad, and let us know back then she had another book in the works, which is now out. It's called Penny Panic. And it's a book for teens who suffer from anxiety. So, I told her back then that I definitely wanted to have her come back to talk about it when that book came out. And now it's available. There'll be links in the show notes where you can find the book. So I hope you enjoy it. Laura Wiseman.
Just the product of some bad seeds.
Laura, how you doing? Welcome back.
Thank you.
I'm glad to have you here. I appreciate you doing this, and have been excited about having you come on to talk about your new book. You know, I think it's an important topic, and sounds like, based on our conversations, that you wrote the book that you needed when you were younger. Is that right? Would you say that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So tell the audience about your book.
So my book is called Penny Panic, an anxiety book. It's a fiction story, so it's not like a textbook or anything like that, or anything type clinical. But it's a young girl going through high school and just going through the motions of, like, you know, dealing with anxiety. And she has her friends and family that is dealing with, some of them are dealing with anxiety as well. But there's moments where she starts to realize that her kind of anxiety is very blatant and very obvious and very, like, in the open, where she's realizing with some of her friends that there's other people that can have anxiety, but kind of suffer in silence, and you never would know.
Right.
Like, there's some people who never in a million years would you guess that this person has anxiety, but they do. And and it's just kind of like her journey through, like, wow, I didn't know, like, you struggled with that. Or, like, wow, I didn't know you can feel anxiety in this way. And, you know, she meets different characters where they, you know, they give her insight and wisdom as to how to deal with anxiety and coping mechanisms that she can use, especially in school. Most of the, I would say all the coping skills that I have in the book, most of them are ones that you can utilize in school. And I think that's important.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think we forget sometimes how tough it is to be a kid and how just ruthless kids can be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it all feels so permanent and like important in a way that when you look back from adulthood, it seems ridiculous that things seemed so catastrophic or, you know, just so big and important, and they're really not. But it still feels that way when you're a kid.
Yeah. And I think I mentioned something on my Instagram the other day, because I had someone reach out to me of like, he was in his mid-20s and he's like, can I read this book, or like, can adults read it? And I had to sit with it for a minute, because I was like, well, this whole time I was like, this is for teens. And I was gearing it towards teens, which it is. But I was like, you know what? Anybody could actually read the book. I mean, it's not like you can't because you're not a teen, but
right.
You know, we've all been teens. We all have that inner teen in us. We've all been through, you know, the struggles of going into high school and trying to fit in, and, you know, just the trial and tribulations of school and friends and all that. And I was like, yeah, totally, adults can read it. I mean, if you know what it feels like, you know, and you can, even as an adult, you can utilize the coping skills for yourself. And I think, in regards to parents, I'm like, this would be cool. It's like the parent read it also with the teen, and then you both can kind of practice together, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when did it come out now? Just recently, right?
So it's kind of, I have it out for pre-order, but it comes out at the end of this month on October 28th. That's when paperback will be available, but you can pre-order. I have it that you can pre-order the paperback on my website if you want an autographed copy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that. Or if you want Kindle, which is on Amazon, you can order it. You can order it now, and when it's October 28th, it'll automatically be delivered to you.
Okay.
Or downloaded.
Well, I'll make sure in the show notes I'll have links to both of those in case, you know, they want to go ahead and pre-order it. So, So how old were you when you first remember experiencing like problematic anxiety?
How old?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I would try to think how old I was. I would say I was 17 or 18, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That was really a hard time, because that was really triggered from like a traumatic event from, you know, my brother's like suicide attempt. So that was very difficult. But as of recent, because I'm actually doing a 9-month course with this author that I really love, that she's a therapist also. She's the Wisdom of Anxiety. She wrote that. She has an anxiety course, which goes like dives deeper into your anxiety thoughts, your intrusive thoughts, everything. So as I've been kind of starting that, I kind of realized, like, I think I've always been an anxious kid. As like I have memories, like preschool memories, even that far back. I think maybe I've always had that. And I think because I was very shy as a kid, and that I think perhaps the traumatic event just kind of, it was like the floodgates opened, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, there's research out there that shows that people with a history of traumatic experiences suffer more when they experience traumatic events.
Mm-hmm.
It's worse for them, you know, like there's, and I'm not, you know, I can't cite anything specific, but I know there's research out there where they've even studied veterans of wars and how who was diagnosed eventually with PTSD. And by and large, it's the people who have some sort of history. You could experience the same event as someone who doesn't, and you would end up developing PTSD where the other person would not. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
So, but it really hit hard around 17. And then at what age would you say you really started to get a handle on it?
I would honestly have to say like 24, 25.
Okay.
is when I started to like kind of really get a hold on it, that I was like, well, you know, I can have my moments, but it wasn't debilitating like it used to. Mm-hmm. I didn't have, like, I was having panic attacks, like, in public. Like, it was all throughout my 20s. I think it really affected, especially it got worse when I was in college and I was commuting from New Jersey to the city every day and just dealing with, you know, the stresses of college and then commuting stress also. So it was very difficult, but I think once I started realizing and researching myself and just doing the inner work with myself and sticking with therapy over the years, that I realized that, you know, I am a sensitive person, and I used to see that as such a negative. And I used to see it as like, oh, you're just so emotional or you're too sensitive about things. And it used to be, I used to take that really hard. So I used to just bottle things up, you know, which is, you know, that just manifests in anxiety or whatever issue you may have. And then I realized that, you know what, my sensitivity, my vulnerability is actually one of my greatest strengths, because I can articulate my feelings with my words, because that's just what I love to do. So it's like, my thing is like, that's why I like to connect with other people, because we're so like similar than different.
Right.
You know, and I think, you know, not to get political, but with all the political nonsense that's out there and focusing on the differences, I'm like, if we all just kind of took a step back and focused on the positive and like, you know, how similar we are and the commonalities we have, like, it would just make things a lot easier and better. And like, just kind of like something good to focus on, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you, man, it's really troubling to me, all the political stuff, you know, I mean, it's a little bit of a dark cloud that kind of never goes away.
Right.
And the only variable is how much time I invest directly paying attention.
You know? And for someone who has anxiety, and I think, you know, with the air that is in the air currently, which is like the state of our world and then politics, it's very hard to not make your anxiety worse. And I think you got to really listen to your body more so than ever, I think, ever than before, to give yourself breaks and to just kind of like, you know what, I'm not going to listen to the news today, or like, you know what, I'm going to take a break from social media, because, you know, it's effective, you know, scrolling through social media or Twitter or Instagram, like, you see constant negativity. It's not going to help you if you're already in a bad spot.
Right. I mean, I've tried to manage it is just by like actually subscribing to a newspaper and just having that be my source. But as we're talking, you know, I'm not a big Facebook guy, but I like Instagram more, and I follow news outlets on Instagram. And as we're talking, I'm thinking I gotta unfollow them, you know, because
I've been doing the same thing. I've been like unfollowing certain like news media outlets, or just like, sometimes I'm like, you know, or sometimes, you know, with just my own personal Facebook feed, I'm like, you know what, I love that they have the snooze feature of like snoozing a person for like 30 days.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh my God, sometimes you just need a break.
Yeah, I haven't done that, but I have. I made a decision a while back, just kind of quietly to, you know, anyone who is like being terroristic on Facebook. And because, you know, like I disagree with a lot of people.
Yeah.
But I don't comment. You know what I mean? I don't.
Right.
And right. And I don't. And what really bothers me more than anything else with that is people talking down to me or someone else, especially because, you know, one of the things about me is, you know, just like when I mentioned that research, I was really clear about, I can't cite anything. I don't know what it is, but here's what I do know about it. I do not pretend to know things I don't know. And I generally don't talk about stuff unless I know what I'm talking about. So then when somebody like attacks that, it really, it's a button that really gets pushed. And, you know, you mentioned the word sensitive, and that was a label that to some extent I had as a kid too. And I just, as I'm listening to you and thinking about it, I realize like, I don't even use that word. At least not in that context. And you know, I don't like it. I don't like that expression. And to me, like the idea, and here's why, because it's got a barb on the end of it. It's implying that there's something wrong with you.
Right. Yeah.
And there's not.
Right.
If anything, it's just a personality trait.
Right.
And you know, right now, politically, that is even under attack, because if you look around, you see signs on the right that, I mean, you see people wearing t-shirts that actually say, fuck your feelings, which is like the problem. That's the problem.
Yeah. I mean, I think with the word sensitive, it's, you know, I was told that from, you know, friends or teachers or even family members. So it's always had a negative connotation, and it's always been very triggering for me when someone says I'm being sensitive, because you're honest. When somebody says that to you, the person's actually dismissing your feelings, because they're like, well, I don't see that as sensitive, so something's wrong with you that you see it that way.
Yeah.
And it's hard when you have, you know, you just have to come to a place where it's like, okay, like, it's sensitive for her, it's sensitive for him or whomever. I might not think it is, but it is for them. It's very real for them.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's a lot of things that, you know, especially when it comes to anxiety, that, like, doesn't seem like it would cause anxiety for some certain people, but in other people, like, it's real as fuck.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it's, you know, like we mentioned, like, I posted something very vulnerable today. Like, today's a shitty day. Like, and I think when you allow yourself to feel it and acknowledge it, and then, like, for me, I need to write it out for myself, because I feel like I don't communicate well, like, verbally, not as well as I do with writing. So for me, it's like, when I feel that tense up anxiety or that tense feeling, for me, writing is like me purging all that out.
Yeah.
And it allows me to connect with other people too. And then others are like, oh my God, that's what I feel. Or, you know, it's just a connection.
Well, and you know, for me, the thing about writing that is really helpful is when I actually take the time to write about something like that, journal, whatever, I generally come away understanding better.
Yes.
I learned something. I see a different side of it that, You know, so it's a discovery thing too.
Yeah, because I actually wrote in the post that I said, as I'm writing, it allows me to slow down my mind and my emotions as I'm writing because I have to think, you know, like it kind of takes me out of that, like that antsy emotional state for a minute, because now it's shifting my brain to write something and it shifts my brain to like think slower and think more thoughtfully. And then it allows for like almost like a clarity and like my own aha moment as I'm writing in like real time. And I'm like, oh, like I didn't even think of it like that. Or like just random like sparks of aha moments will come through. And I'm like, that's what I need to do when it comes to like writing. So that's why writing has always been my go-to when it comes to just any type of emotional stuff I need to get out.
Well, and you know, to the connecting part of it, one of the beautiful things about you being willing to tell your story, and I've done it in different ways too, is that it makes it okay for other people. You know, I'm sure there are people who read your posts all the time, like for the first time, and it clicks to them. You know, I've felt this so many times and I've been ashamed to even talk about it or even think about it or acknowledge it. And, you know, that's a big part of the problem too, because mental health, emotional well-being in our culture is so taboo. That, I mean, it's no wonder that, you know, we use the far and away largest quantity of drugs on the face of the earth, like
100%. Yeah. You know how I kind of describe it as, you know, I mean, I've had my Instagram and my, like my whole thing for so many years, and it's just now that there's a light being shined on it, you know? So I've always shared very vulnerable posts when I'm going through things or just documenting and just trying to connect with people. So there has been a lot of people who are like, who have said that, where they're like, I have felt this so much, I'm just afraid to say it. And I think that even though I'm sharing like really vulnerable shit, that's one thing that I don't think I'm afraid of, is to share it, because it's like just throughout my travels and people I've met, and when I've had like really deep conversations with people, and it's like when you let that guard down and you just let somebody else in for a moment, and you realize like we all come from different walks of life, but honestly, like we've kind of dealt with the same things to various degrees, but we can always empathize with the other person and be like, oh my God, like I didn't go through that exact thing, but I felt that same feeling.
Right.
Or I have felt that in the past. And I think that's kind of what's missing. And I think just, especially with mental health, I think the missing factor, and I've said this in my professional life, and I've gotten in trouble with it many times, because I have, you know, it was hard to be an advocate for people who were so severely mentally ill in a system that is so archaic.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm seeing these people as human beings and the system is seeing them as like another number or another person to give pills to or just another check to get from Medicaid, you know, and it's like when you start seeing people like that, you lose that connection, that human connection, and it loses the value of like, of just the therapeutic value. It loses that.
Yeah. Well, because it's, you know, this is somebody's dad, you know, or somebody's brother.
Yeah.
Or that's, in my world, that's one of the things that the people who I have respected the most in my career are the ones who remember that.
Right. That
these people have lives and families and dreams.
Yeah. And to be honest, like in the professional world of mental health, and just through going through therapy myself and then being on the other side professionally, I could say there's a handful of people like that.
Yeah.
Like, I can count on my hand, unfortunately, how many people are like that, truly like that, and think that way. And it's a shame, because I'm like, you guys are the backbone of, like, you are the true heroes of mental health, you know,
right.
Those types of people who still, like, have that view. I'm like, no, this is like, you have to see them as a human being first.
Well, and in my world, those are the people who've ended up being the leaders.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah.
So this is exciting stuff. I know the first time we talked, your book had been out for a while, but you had just been on Gary Vee.
I know.
And I think it was the same week, which was great for me, because I ended up getting some, I know you picked up a ton of followers from him, and then I ended up getting a fraction of those from having you on.
And yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it is. I appreciate that.
Yeah, of course.
So what's next for you?
I don't know. I've been asking myself that question today, you know, because I have no idea. Like, I don't think, I mean, I was thinking throughout the years of like what I wanted to do with my life, and writing has always been in my mind, but you know, in the beginning it was always traveling, and which it still is. And you know, I tried my best to be like, oh, you know what, I'm gonna be a traveler, I'm just gonna be like this nomad and like, you know, going around, hopping around, but it just didn't work. And then I was like, well, I have my degree I can fall back on, which I did for a couple of years, but it just wasn't fulfilling. And you know, this quarantine, like in the beginning, kind of really made me reevaluate, like, okay, like, I feel like I'm getting another shot here. And I think I have to kind of take the bull by the horns with this and really try to make this work. And there's plenty of times where I'm like, I don't think I can do it, or I'm not sure if this is meant for me, but I have to like try to stay positive and just be like, and just think of things where in my past where I didn't believe like it could happen, but then it eventually did, just out of pure patience and perseverance. So, I mean, this is what I want to do. I want to write my books. I want to inspire people. I want to help people. Like with the second one, I want to help kids. I want to help teens. I want to go on podcasts. Like, I love this. Like, this is it. Like, if I could just get paid to do this, like, then I'd be happy as shit.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, but I can't make money. I can't pay my bills on hopes and dreams, you know?
But yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, this is really what this podcast is all about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I feel like we all deserve to do what we want to do with our lives and with our time. And that ultimately, what I have experienced is that when I'm willing to take the risk to really do what I want to do, things fall into place, you know, and it's not necessarily going to be easy. But this podcast, I mean, I left a full-time job to, you know, it was a contract that was finished, but I made a conscious decision. I'm not going to go get another job. I'm not going to do it. Yeah. I'm not going to get another job. And for another 4 or 5 years, put off doing what I actually want to do. It's time to put up or shut up. And
it took a while
to make it happen. Yeah, but
it's a scary leap. It really is. Because like, I've always kind of thought that, but then I was at my mental health job, you know, and I was like, this was always my thing. And everybody was like, well, you should do it. And I'm like, and then I got to a point where I was like, I just have to like, just do it. So like, I quit.
Yeah.
Like I quit that career path. Like I have to stay in mental health because that's what I studied in school. And you know, now this time around, it's like, who knows? I mean, who knows what the job market's going to be like when this, when the dust settles with this. So I've been thinking, like, what do I do? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, I also have that in my mind where I'm like, I refuse to go back. Like, this is going to work. Like, I'm going to bust my ass. Granted, I just had wrist surgery, but like, I just can't do it. It's not like, I feel like I have to take that chance where it's like, it's scary, but I'm like, if I have to wait tables,
yeah,
I don't care. Like, I will do it if that means that I'm going to just try my hardest to make this possible, yeah. You know?
Well, and this process for me, I had to show my commitment in that way.
Yeah.
You know, there were times when, like, I picked up odd jobs just to bring in a little bit of money, mm-hmm. you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, essentially what I was looking for is a job where I could work and make just enough money to cover my expenses.
Yeah.
And then, mm-hmm. and it took me a while to figure it out, and it got kind of dicey for a little while there. It got scary, but I stuck with mm-hmm. it, and I'm glad I did. I'm glad, you know, right. things have gotten easier, not perfect, but mm-hmm. you know, the other thing, just my two cents listening to you, is I think part of this is about you just making peace with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that whole idea of something to fall back on and all that, like, that's something that somebody else projected onto me.
Yeah, I know.
And
yeah.
and that's, and it's hard to let go of. But one of the things that I'm really happy to hear you talk about is how this pandemic and the shutdown, how it led you to reevaluate where you're going, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. to me, spiritually, this whole thing, especially in the beginning, it proved to us that security is not real.
Right.
Like anything mm-hmm. can disappear at mm-hmm. a moment's notice. And mm-hmm. it did. And here we mm-hmm. are all these months later. We're still wearing yeah. masks. We're, yeah. you know, still social distancing. I mean, and, but the beauty is that, like, I have clients who I've worked with who suddenly, you know, they're corporate people. Suddenly they're working from home and their mm-hmm. lives are better.
Mm-hmm.
They're happier than they've been in a long time. And, yeah. and it's an opportunity. That what drives me crazy is hearing the idea that we need to get back to normal.
Yeah,
because to me, we can do better than that.
Yeah,
we can do better than that.
I think there's going to be it's a new normal, not back to what we were.
Yeah,
and I think it's for the best. And I think this was a blessing and a curse to some degree. Like, I think it was. Maybe not a curse, but I think this was a blessing and a little bit of a punch to the gut for everyone. But like, in a good way, where it's like, you know, reevaluate your shit. Like, is this true? Like, I've heard from just friends of mine, like, oh, you know what? I realized this was not the career I wanted, or you know what? Or I realized this is not the person I want to be with.
Right.
You know, or maybe this is not the town I want to live in or the state I want to live in. Now that I work from home, I can work anywhere. Why yeah. would I stay here? Like, I think it's just everybody's priorities have changed. And I think it's a good thing. Like, I've always felt this and kind of knew this as young as 18, because when I was traveling, I would meet so many people from all cultures, and all walks of life and just my own observations of, like, in my travels of just like, how great it is to, you know, just live life, and it's not about work. Like, and I would always come back home being like, why is America like that? Where I'm like, why are we so stuck on, like, how hard you work, to the point where you work so hard that you are making yourself sick? Like, our society is sick. both physically and spiritually. And I realized that, and that's, I think that's why I always sought out to go travel and see other cultures who understood that.
Yeah.
Where I'd be like, you guys get it. Like, the Italians take their lunch breaks and they're sitting there having a glass of wine or their coffee. They're not rushing back to work.
Yeah.
They're enjoying that lunch break.
Yeah.
You know, or it's like when we used to work in a corporate setting where I would be made fun of if I took my lunch break. How dare I not sit at my desk and eat my lunch and work? Where I would shoot right back. I'd be like, how dare you tell me I have to work like this?
Yeah.
I'm entitled to my lunch break, and it does not have to be inside of the office.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
and that to me is just the whole point. We've gotten to that point where it's like you're seen as lazy or you're seen as like weird or ostracized. You're taking care of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is a badge of honor to be a workaholic in our culture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to work yourself to exhaustion and into the ground. And, you know, I mean, really, like, you know, there are people I love who work constantly, go out of their way to have a job, have a project, have another project, to the point where they're constantly busy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And all it is a way for them to avoid themselves.
Right.
That's all that it is. Now, it might be good for their bank account.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in some cases, they're also good at like taking time off and stuff like that. But, you know, when it's at the expense of the relationships in your life, what's the point?
Right.
Why are you doing it?
I know. Yeah. But I mean, this pandemic should show that. Like, it should show, like, we're dealing with, like, let's say there was a complete, not that we're not in it already, but I'm saying complete economic crash where, like, money didn't even matter anymore, right? Let's say it was that deep.
Right.
Would it really matter how much you had in your bank account if, like, money just lost its value?
Yeah.
Would it really matter that, like, you busted your ass to that exhausted point? No. Like, I always think in those, I don't know what you would call it, but I always think in those terms, like, if, like, almost kind of like worst case scenario to keep me in check and to give me perspective, where it's like, if your father, or your mother, or your significant other was to be on their desk by tomorrow, would it matter? Would XYZ matter? Or if you got sick, would that matter? It wouldn't.
Well, I posted a quote a couple days ago, a Jack Kerouac quote, where it says something like, you know, because you're not going to remember the time you spent at your desk or mowing your lawn, climb the goddamn mountain.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's true. And it's there's so many things that factor into this atmosphere of dis-ease that we live in as a society between, you know, the economic system in this country that glorifies labor on someone else's behalf.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people who work that hard usually aren't doing it for themselves. They're making somebody else rich. You know?
Yeah. And I think that I have a very hard time with that.
Yeah. Well, concept. And we're indoctrinated to believe that that's what we're supposed to do and to glorify that, you know?
You know, yeah. And in recent years, with just like the last few jobs that I've had, I just can't, I don't know if it was after leaving my mental health job and just kind of being like, you know, I was very opinionated and vocal, and my boss allowed for it because she was super cool. But I also was struggling with like the other side where I fell in line and did what they said because that's what you're supposed to do and blah, blah, blah. And after I left, I don't know. I don't want, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like I had some type of, like, awakening where I just was, like, you know, with certain jobs where, like, I left, I had a job where I was at for, like, 2 months. And the boss was so, just so aggressive, like, and, like, condescending. And I'm, like, thinking to myself, like, and so that's when I think to myself, like, if I was to die tomorrow, would this fucking matter?
Yeah. Yeah. And do I want to spend a third of my life this way?
No. And I was just like, you're not even paying me near what I need at this moment, because I only took this job because out of pure desperation that I just needed to have some extra cash coming in. But I quit. Once I had something else lined up, I was like, I'm quitting. Like, and he was so shocked. And then I just, and he was like, oh, you know, I'm surprised. Like, you seem like you enjoyed it. And which I did to some degree, but I said, and he was like, well, why did you leave? And I said, well, you know, if we're going to be honest, it's because of the way you speak to me and the way you speak to other people who work here, who are working very hard to keep your business alive and your dream alive. And I was like, you're very condescending when you speak. I said, nobody likes being talked to like that. No one. I don't care how much you pay them.
How do you respond to that?
He was dead silent. He was shocked because he was just, you know, I didn't realize. I was like, I just feel like you and I never got off on a good foot. And I feel like you just straight off the bat didn't like me for some reason. And I said, I don't know where that came from. But I was like, I'm quitting because of that. And then the other manager came to me later on and said, I just want to congratulate you for standing up for yourself, because he was so pissed off and so shocked that you said that to him, because everybody thinks what you said, but nobody has the balls to say it to him. Yeah. She's like, you were the first one to say it. And so after I left, they said, oh, I pulled a Laura today. And I
was like, oh my gosh, you became a legend.
Yeah. They were like, you left a mark. Oh, you'll always be remembered like that. And I'm like, always stand up for yourself. You know, there's a fine line with that. You know, I don't come off aggressive where I'm looking to fight with a boss. You know what I mean? It's like, that's not the message. But I just feel like some people, I don't care what position you're in, you can't talk to people like that. And maybe that's why I'm not meant. And I've always felt like, you know what? I think I need to realize it for myself that I'm not meant to be and to work for somebody else.
Yeah.
Because I just can't.
Well, or, you know, I mean, you gotta, like, I've learned over the years that a lot of times in life, you know, the quality of life, happiness, we gotta find our people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that has to be a choice to walk away from other people.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And not go back.
Yeah.
And sometimes we do have to look somebody in the eye and say, you know what? This isn't good enough.
Yeah. Or like, this isn't, it's having the confidence to say, like, this isn't okay.
Right.
Like, you know, and I know, and listen, I've been in jobs where I was afraid to speak my mind, you know, and it only hurts you. Like, it only hurt me. They didn't care. Or they didn't realize what they were saying or doing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But not everyone feels that way. There's people who love their job and love their bosses. And it's not to say that I can't ever one day find a place to work where, you know, I love the boss and it's like a great environment. I'm sure there's companies and people out there, but
I've had jobs where it was, everybody knew the owner boss was an asshole. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew. But some of those people could work for him for 15 years.
Yeah.
I could do it for 6 months. You know,
yeah. That's how I'm the same way. Like, eventually there comes to a point where I'm like, Jesus Christ, like, this is just like, this is abuse.
Yeah.
Like, you guys are all being abused. Like, why do you guys allow it?
Yeah.
And I think some people are like, hey, you know, I need a job. I have this, I have that. And I'm like, yeah, this is like, it just comes back to that point. Like, is it worth it?
Yeah.
Is it Like, is it worth that?
Well, and really what we're talking about is dysfunction.
Yeah.
Walking away from dysfunction, loving yourself enough to walk away from dysfunction, because it never really pays. Because like that boss, mm-hmm. what ended up happening is, I mean, he created an atmosphere where it was really difficult to go to him.
Right, yeah.
And say, listen, I'm having a hard time with this, mm-hmm. you know, or I'm confused about this. Will you clarify? Because he'd just get mad every time he walked into his office.
Right.
And yeah. so then the next thing you know, I don't walk into his office to ask him. And, you know, it turned out this project turned out not as mm-hmm. good as it should have. And mm-hmm. he used it as an excuse to let me go. And right. I just told him, listen, man, you know, you're a jerk to me. Like, you didn't mm-hmm. exactly put out a welcome mat for me to come mm-hmm. to you and ask questions.
Right.
So yeah. you can blame this on me if you want, but, you know, I'm not buying it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's difficult.
It is. And you know, the thing is that though, that all these things, like this is what you need to go through this stuff to write about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's one of the things I've recognized about some of these jobs that I've had, you know, I'm who I am because of those experiences.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I've learned those lessons that way.
Yeah. So. Like I don't, as much as I've been burnt out or like I absolutely hated some of these jobs, like I don't regret them at all because they made me realize certain things about myself or realize like, oh, you know what? That's not the path. This one is, you know,
mm-hmm.
yeah. or just what type of work environment I would want to be in. Or just made me realize like, hey, you know what? This is totally not for me. I think I'm slowly like realizing like, you know, I want to be my own boss. I have such an entrepreneurial spirit that I've always been like that even as a kid, but I've always shut it down being like, it's impossible. Like you can't do it. Like, it's just, it's cool to think about, but okay. Like that's like one in a million, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's like, well, you have it in you. You've done it as a kid. Like I used to sell things as a kid, like garage sailing. I used to do that as a kid for many years. I would help my dad sell things. I would much rather try my hardest to accomplish those things or see if it could happen than not try them at all. I think that's worth.
Mm. Well, and you know, I mean, as I'm listening, what I'm thinking about is, and I've been the same way, like, you know, it's a mindset of scarcity
mm-hmm.
over abundance. And you know, it took me a long time. And this podcast going through this process has helped me a lot to see possibilities rather than obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, you know, the people who teach us these things, you know, are projecting their fears onto us. Well, mm-hmm. what if you got a piss bill, or what if you, you know, what about this and what about that? Shooting holes
mm-hmm.
because it doesn't fit into their story of how things are supposed to be, you know?
Yeah.
It just, it's not part of their reality. So they yeah. think it's not possible.
Yeah. I think I learned that a lot very early on when I was traveling a lot when I was like in my early 20s. Because when you're kind of backpacking around and you have very limited funds and anything and everything will come your way, it makes you very, you become almost adaptable or just almost like a little bit like a chameleon of like your situation. You're like, okay, well, that curveball just came. Okay, what else are we going to do? Instead of looking at it like that's a problem, you just got to be like, all right, well, let's think of a solution,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think that mindset that I've had from just traveling, because there's so many things that go wrong when you're abroad and you don't speak the language, you don't know how the majority of things work. It gave me such a useful skill to have, just the resourcefulness and
yeah, resilience.
Mm-hmm.
And we are, you know, if we allow ourselves to be resilient people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, so I can't remember if the last time you were on, I asked you this question, because I started doing this a while back where, mm-hmm. you know, usually at the beginning I ask, you know, what's a day in the life look like? What's your world like? And then the last question is this, and that's, if there was a time in your life when you needed to go back and give yourself a word of advice, when would it have been and what would you say?
When would it have been? I think I would have to go back to that time where I spoke in the beginning of, like, when my anxiety was at its worst and I truly didn't believe it would get better. I really didn't. I didn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. And it's so hard when your mind is so clouded with anxiety and trauma and whatever else that I wish I could have told myself, like, really truly believe that it does and that this is truly temporary and that you are way stronger than you think. Even in the weakest moments that you think you're super weak, that's like your time to be like super resilient and realize like everything's gonna be okay, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, you definitely lived that out. I mean,
yeah.
Here you are all these years later, you just published your second book. Mm-hmm. I bet you couldn't have imagined that when you were that no. girl. And listen, I thank you for being willing to, one, show yourself to the world, and two, put forth the effort. I mean, I have a 14-year-old boy
mm-hmm.
who can benefit from a book like this. And, mm-hmm. and there are lots of kids who can, because, I mean, there's more anxiety now in this world probably than there's ever been. And you know, the method that we use to meet on Instagram, social media has like made it even worse, you know? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. just thank you for doing what you're doing and for sticking with it and for having the courage to put yourself out there and say, I'm having a bad day, but I'm going to get through it, and modeling that for everybody else. So mm-hmm. I appreciate you coming back on here. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to The Path to Authenticity. If you'd like to learn more about our guest, you can find links in the show notes or visit our website at thepathtoauthenticity.com. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor, if you have a suggestion for a topic, or you know someone who would make a great guest, email the show at thepathtoauthenticity@gmail.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. If you know someone else who would enjoy the show, or even just a particular episode, please share it with them. Every little bit helps. If you're not already a subscriber, please consider becoming one wherever it is you choose to listen. You can find the show on Patreon, where by becoming a patron, you can hear episodes before they're released publicly. You can gain access to supplemental content. There are other benefits in the various tiers. Visit patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. Join our Facebook community or follow the show on Instagram, both at The Path to Authenticity. We also have a YouTube channel. You can connect with us on Twitter or Pinterest. To hear the songs from this and every episode, you can find the Path to Authenticity playlist on Spotify. Obviously, there are a lot of ways you could be spending your time, so I appreciate you spending some of it here with me. I'm Tom Gentry. Thanks for listening. Be nice.
great, honeybee.
The path to authenticity is powered by Equivox. For digital marketing and web design services, visit equivox.com.